Good morning. Thank you, Margaret, for inviting me. Thank you, everybody, for being here. Maybe there's space in the front. I feel this is actually, it's a watershed moment for mental health, where usually mental health is in the dark room in the corner. And I feel like we're at the cusp of the need for a new room, which is really exciting. So I was, I understand the impulse to stay in the back. That is where I would like to be, too. So I was asked to frame our conceptual thinking behind this. And the way this session is has been characterized, and Margaret captured it well, is a paradigm shift to moving beyond individual-based curative approaches to mental health, which really continue to dominate the biomedical interaction with mental health, into a more population-based, community-based approach to mental health. And what I want to do is I want to offer a few thoughts on conceptually why that is the right thing to do and where that might lead us. And then my fellow presenters are going to go into some more detail about examples that build on that. So let me start here. I have nothing to disclose on this. So I'm going to try to address three questions. And the first question is, should we take a population approach to mental health? The second question, perhaps a harder question, is, can we afford not to take a population approach to mental health? And the third question, which is really designed to lead into the other presentations, is, so can we do it? Can we shift our thinking about mental health to a population-based approach to mental health? So let me start with the first question, which is, should we take a population approach to mental health? Now, you're all in this room, so presumably you have had some thoughts about this, but I would like to help organize our thoughts around three particular answers to this. And the first answer is intuition. In science, I think the work that we do in population health scholarship, population health practice, we perhaps do not acknowledge enough the role that intuition plays or the role that intuition should play. But in the spirit of the theme of APHA, healthography, one can look at a few very simple ideas that can help us refine our intuition about why a population-based approach to mental health might be appropriate. So, for example, this is a map of depression in the United States in 2008, the year for which their most recent data are available. And all I want to point out is that there is about a threefold difference in the prevalence of depression in American states between, say, North Dakota and where we are here, Louisiana. And it requires a tremendous act of disbelief in logic and reason to think that such differences are all driven by inter-individual differences between the residents of Louisiana and North Dakota, which makes one think that there is something that is informing population mental health and differences in mental health prevalences in populations. Now you say, well, it's the United States. It's a big country. It's national. How about looking at a city? This is New York City, where I live and work. And this shows the same thing, prevalence of depression in New York City. This is in 2010. And what you see here is that you have neighborhoods up here in Upper Manhattan, where you have about a 2 to 3-fold difference in the prevalence of depression in neighborhoods that are about a mile apart. It is very difficult for one to think anything but that there are drivers of population mental health that are informing these differences. It is implausible to think that these differences are driven only by individuals when you're dealing with essentially physical space, physical proximity. Now, another critique of this potential approach and intuition is say, well, we're dealing with depression, and depression relies on self-report, measurement error. The field is always fraught with argument about what is categorical diagnosis, what is not. So forget about depression. Let's go to something else. Autism. A lot of discussion on autism lately. It's a neuropsychiatric condition. There are billions of dollars invested in diagnosis of autism. You've all heard about the efforts to assess our validity in diagnosis of autism. And when you look at the map of the United States, you see, again, about threefold differences in many adjacent states, for example, looking at Minnesota and Illinois. So there is plenty of reason to realize that the population burden of mental health can be dramatically different across the country within cities. And such differences really help educate our intuition that there is something that is driving these population-level differences that extends well beyond the individual, that it is not plausible to think that these are inter-individual differences that are driving these differences across populations, which of course leads us to saying, is there a reason for us to think about population-based approach to mental health? Making the answer yes. So that's A, intuition. B is a question of values. This is something else that we frequently do not surface enough in our thinking about population health. At the end of the day, I would like to argue that values inform everything we do in our professional life, in our scholarship, in public health, and we frequently do not label it enough. But in the context of thinking about mental health, in the context of a population-based approach to mental health, one can ask whether a population-based approach to mental health is more consistent with the values that implicitly guide what we do. And here's an illustration. Ask yourself this. Would you prefer to have access to effective treatment for your schizophrenia? Or would you prefer never to have schizophrenia at all? Now, I will leave it to all of you to think about which one of these you prefer. But I would ask you this. Where are we, and by we I mean the capital W-E, society, investing our dollars? Are we investing them here? Or are we investing them here? If we are investing them here, and if that is dissonant with our values, it of course raises the question, why? If one, when one is formal about this, it surfaces our conceit. The question is, why are we tolerating that? And that's why I was so excited about this session, because it is a session that is explicitly saying, let us challenge ourselves to ask, is it time for a paradigm shift to start thinking about mental health from a population-based perspective? One very apposite quote on this, which I really liked from McGuinness and Fagy, is that one of our most difficult challenges is to ensure that the urgent does not crowd out the important. In health, the challenge is especially difficult because urgent matters can be so riveting. By urgent here, going back to my previous slide, is the question of treatment of schizophrenia. There is no question that treatment is an urgent need. But there also is probably no question that at a core level, it is important that we think about the foundational drivers of why we have severe mental illness to begin with and think of ways to prevent it. And our challenge is to make sure that we balance the urgent with the important. So going back to my original question, we've dealt with intuition. Now we're dealing with values. And then let me just end on this one with a third concept around formalism. And we all know this. This is now goes back to Epidemiology 101, which is a subject close to my heart, and how we think about populations. So if one were to think about populations like this, it's just a schematic of a population. It represents a blue population, which is perhaps dissonant with the current midterm elections. But when one thinks about populations this way, and one thinks about our dominant paradigm, which is that there are exposures. There are exposures to some things, and that those exposures are associated with pathology. Ultimately, we are here to promote public health, which at some level of definition really means a society that is functioning with minimal pathology. So let us say that exposure here is in red, and what you see is that for most exposures, it is a minority of society that has that particular exposure. Why is that? Well, typically, because if it's a majority of society, we tend not to think of an exposure, we tend to think of exposure as normatively something that a minority are exposed to. And then we have cases of disorder, which is here green. Now what you see here is that green divided by red is bigger than green divided by blue, because the denominator is smaller over there. This is sort of elementary algebra, which makes, of course, exposure a high-risk group. But you also realize that there is disorder in a low-risk group. Now, this is a simple schematic, but what this should make clear is that if we focus our attention only on a high-risk group, we are definitionally going to be not dealing with pathology in the low-risk group. And one can see very simply that from the schematic, it's not that difficult to imagine a condition where you have more cases of pathology in the low-risk group than you have in the high-risk group. What does that mean? Why does this matter? It matters because if one focuses only on a biomedical approach that deals with individual-level treatment, one is going to miss all these people. And the only way around that is by taking a population-level approach to mental health. So going back to my first question, should we take a population approach to mental health? I think the answer, on grounds of values, on grounds of intuition, and on grounds of formal thinking about the role of public health, the answer is an unequivocal yes. Now let me move to my second question. So having said that, should we I think there is an even more compelling argument to be made that not only should we, but we cannot afford not to. So the question is, can we afford not to take a population approach to mental health? So the important answer to this question rests on this observation, which builds on my last set of formal slides. Our curative efforts are always fixing only one very small bit of a much larger challenge. Now, this is important to wrap one's brain around, because in public health, one can't help but feel, not infrequently, that we take the approach that says, you know, we sort of think that it's important to take a population health approach, but we know that the biomedical individual-based approach is our dominant approach, and that's sort of okay. We'll get to the public health approach later. And what this is going to argue is that it's actually not okay. That if we are here and we are interested in promoting the health of the public, it is not okay to accept a curative focus, because a curative focus, mathematically, is dealing with only one small part of the challenge. And if we are interested in improving the health of populations, which presumably is what this trade show is all about, then we ultimately have to move beyond the individual approach, and we cannot afford not to do that. So let me explain why. Let me go back to my paradigm. It's a blue population. And here I'm using green for those who are exposed. So I have a population, and a certain number of people are exposed. A certain number of people end up with disease. Red axis are disease. So you see that some of the green people have disease, some of the blue people have disease. If you do the math, you have more disease among the green than the blue. So exposed people are at high risk, more likely to have disease. Now, taking this to a classic Jeffrey Rose paradigm, if you have any exposure risk factor on the x-axis and the prevalence on the y-axis, you have a bell curve. Most of us are somewhere here. We have some amount of risk factor. Few lucky people have less. Unlucky people have more. Our biomedical enterprise, which broadly speaking accounts for about 95-96% of health spending in this country, adopts the approach where we identify those who are at high risk of disease. There are many reasons why we do that. We do that because we know that there is a higher risk of disease in that group. We do that because it's easier. We do that because we have a large industry of testing to identify people who are at high risk. We do this in all aspects of health, physical health, mental health. Every time you go to your physician or healthcare provider for your cholesterol check, it's exactly what you're doing. We do that. Pardon me. And then we try to deal with these people. We deal with them and we say, look, they're better. Your cholesterol's high, don't eat Big Macs, take Lipitor, or something like that, right? The problem with this approach is that we are only dealing with the exposed people, the green people. We are missing all the blue people with the X's. By contrast, a population health strategy takes this and moves the curve, dealing now with these folks, but also reducing risk factor burden everybody else. So schematically, the population health strategy starts with this, and what we're doing is we are flipping more people from green to blue, which is reducing many more people with exposure. So therefore, factors in population are inevitably driving the prevalence of mental health. And if our goal as a society is to improve the health of populations, which, by the way, populations are sums of individuals. Reducing the burden of disease in populations means making as many people better as we can. Can we afford not to try to take a population health approach? And the answer is absolutely not. Now, I would argue that although I'm saying this in as a congenial a way as I can muster, this is a fairly radical proposition, because if one accepts that we cannot afford not to take a population health approach, the observation, amply documented, that in the country with the highest per capita spending on health anywhere in the world, 95-96% of healthcare dollars are spent on individual curative efforts, that is grossly unacceptable. Right? So if one agrees with my second point, then we have a colossal societal problem on our hands. So I will assume that those of you who disagree will, in the question session, take me to task on it. Because really, this is the state of affairs. Right? The state of affairs is ignoring this. And we are saying that we can afford not to do it because It's just how we do things. Okay, my third point. So, can we? Can we take a population approach to mental health? The answer is going to be made very clear by my colleagues who come after me, but I just want to give you a couple of thoughts on this, and I really want to ground it in a couple of comparative examples. So let me just give you a story. This is a real case. A 47-year-old man, he has felled by an illness, cannot seem to get moving, cannot get around anymore. His doctors think they sort of understand what it is, but ultimately it's a controversial field, and they don't really know what to do about it because a lot of people in the country seem to have the same cause and same exposure, and they generally recommend rest, some treatments that may or may not work, and hope for the best. Now, how familiar is this? Right? People are here because you're interested in mental health. Does this ring a bell? Does this look roughly like what we do today? So this is not today. This is 60 years ago. This is a real case. It's a man who became president. This is Lyndon Johnson, when at age 47, he had a heart attack. So when Lyndon Johnson had a heart attack, he was a smoker. Roughly, this is what happened. Doctors thought smoking had something to do with it, but everybody smoked. So how could it be smoking? What was the treatment? Roughly watchful waiting. And then he got better, he became president in Vietnam War and all that. But the notion is, accepting, that was a gross oversimplification of President Johnson's contributions to the country. The notion is that in an area like cardiovascular disease, where today prevention and a population health approach is considered to be a sine qua non of our national approach to non-communicable disease and to cardiovascular disease specifically, 50, 60 years ago, we were not that different than where we are today with mental health. This is a good example of a population curve shifting on cholesterol from Finland, showing exactly the curves I showed you before, shifted over there in a classic population health approach. It is also true that in cardiovascular disease, there is an acceptance of potentially bold, innovative ideas to deal with the epidemic of obesity, to deal with cardiovascular disease more broadly. This is one of my favorite efforts to say, well, if we want to deal with obesity, let's just ban escalators. Which, I don't know if you've noticed, but at the American Public Health Association meeting, at the escalators going up to this floor, we all stand as the escalator moves us up, 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 up. The only point is that we have created a possibility space in the prevention of cardiovascular disease, in the population-based approach to cardiovascular disease, a possibility space that we have not created yet in mental health, and that presumably this session is designed to try to nudge us towards. This is from an Institute of Medicine report, which says it's no longer sufficient to expect that reforms in the medical care delivery system alone will improve the public's health. Large proportions of the U.S. disease burden are preventable, which hopefully by now should have become evident in my talk. So, can we take a population health approach to mental health? My answer is very simply yes. My colleagues will show clear examples of this, but I'm resting this point on the fact that there are other diseases where in the past we have not considered it was possible and where we have effected successfully a paradigm shift. Should we effect a paradigm shift? I think it is definitional that we should effect a paradigm shift. Ultimately, public health is what we as a society do collectively to assure the conditions for people to be healthy. Assuring conditions is at the core of what public health does. Assuring conditions is at the core of shifting the curve on mental health, improving mental health in populations. And an inextricable part of that is prevention, which is the action of stopping something from happening or arising. This is from the dictionary definition of prevention, which one can only do when one's lens is on a population-based approach to a particular disorder. It is high time that we get there in the context of mental health. And I will end with a metaphor. So this is my favorite goldfish metaphor. You have a goldfish in a bowl. And the reason I'm putting this on here is because the goldfish, everything the goldfish eats, drinks, breathes, is influenced by the water in its bowl. And for the goldfish in its bowl, frankly, it knows nothing else than that particular water. If one is interested in shifting the health of populations within goldfish bowls, we need to make sure that we improve the water. It is not enough to act on the individual goldfish. Unless we do that, we are not going to affect the kind of improvement in health on a particular dimension, be it cardiovascular disease, or be it mental health, that we hope to achieve and that we aspire to. I'll stop there. Thank you very much.